Okay, good evening and welcome to the performance scrutiny panel. First of all, I would like to welcome Councillor Shona Rattray, who's joined us tonight for the first time at scrutiny. And Councillor Rattray is representing Birstall. Welcome. I have to read out this notice. This meeting will be recorded and the sound recording subsequently made available via the Council's website. Please also note that under the Openness of Local Government Bodies Regulations 2014, that other people may film, record, tweet or blog from this meeting. The use of any images or sound recordings is not under the Council's control. Thank you. Do we have any apologies, please?
Councillor Gerald and the lead member, Councillor Morgan.
Thank you. The minutes of the previous meeting held on the 9th of October. Can I confirm those as a correct record?
Move it, Chair.
Thank you. Agreed?
Agreed.
Yeah,
thank you. Disclosures of pecuniary and personal interest. I would like to disclose a personal interest in item 7 as a member of Leicestershire County Council. There are no declarations of the party whip, and we have no questions under scrutiny committee procedure 11.6. We now move on to the quarter two performance monitoring report, and I'd like to invite Suzanne Kimber to join us. Thank you. I would like to say before we go through this report, which does start on page 12, how pleased I am to see how up to date most of the things are and how many are now green, and quite a lot completed, which I think, bearing in mind where we were a few months ago, this is excellent progress. So I'll hand over to you. Okay, thank you.
Suzanne Kinder, Corporate Improvement and Policy Officer. So at quarter two, there were 49 activities in the annual business plan. Out of these, one of the objectives was reported as red, 8 objectives were reported as amber, and 36 as green. In addition, 4 objectives have been completed this quarter. So as always, I will go through on a thematic basis and point out any red or amber objectives based on exception.
If I could just interrupt, could you indicate by page number when you're going through things?
I certainly can, sorry.
It's just so it's easier for people, particularly those using the extra media non-paperwork now, if they know what paper.
Okey-doke. So
you.
Page 17, I'll head straight to on page 17, which is creating a strong and lasting economy. Within this theme, there are 12 activities, 10 were reported as green and 2 activities were graded as amber. So to highlight to you that the first amber activity was with regards to the local development scheme and the preparation of the consultation. The publication of the consultation is due in October 2018, but it is behind timescales due to staff resources within that particular team. This was also amber within the last quarter, just to highlight that to you as well, but the service are confident that once a revised publication date is published, they'll be able to report that back to the panel.
Would you like the questions as we go along or at the end of each section?
It's entirely up to you, whatever you feel.
Per item, it's easier to...
Do it per bit.
Per section.
Activity, because then you're querying of the specifics.
We'll carry on to the end of the...
In that case, Chair, if I may ask a question. Councillor Babington, Shepshed East. Regarding that, obviously it's been missed, but there's nothing in here about what the impact is of that being missed. It isn't in the risk register, for example. I understand that they intend to catch up, but what are the implications of the delay? What damage is it going to do?
If you don't mind, Chair, I could direct you straight to the head of service for this particular objective and ask that question straight to him.
impact in terms of what? In terms of time scale?
Would you like to join us at the table for a couple of minutes, Mr. Bennett?
Thank you. Just help me to, in terms of what, time scale? Or?
There was a target to achieve October, which has just passed.
Yes.
We haven't met that target. What has been the impact on anything? Because there's nothing in here that says these are the implications. All that's mentioned in the terms is that it is just recording the progress, and there's no statement in there that I see that mentions why it had to be October, even why it's amber and not red.
Yeah, so the reason it's October is that in the programme plan for the local plan, which was approved by Cabinet, a timetable was set out for the preparation of the new local plan, which set out a milestone for a draft report in October. Cabinet was wanting to accelerate the local plan preparation to ensure that as much control as possible was exerted around managing things like housing supply and where growth was going in the borough. And they wanted to ensure that the local plan was brought home in a comfortable timescale to ensure its continued up-to-dateness. It's not really a word, but you know what I mean. To
maintain, I understand what you're saying.
So whilst we mapped out in our local development scheme, which is the project plan, the fastest possible opportunity to bring forward that plan, there is some latitude around the timescale that the local plan could be brought forward. So it could be slowed down if members wanted that to happen. And I'm sure members will be aware that the lead officer on the local plan, the group leader, broken his leg out of the office for 3 months, which is why the programme slipped. But that is within the tolerance for preparing a local plan to a timescale which will not it's not going to lead to a situation where our plan is going to be out of date, if you see what I mean. So we in our current local plan, we've set out a strategy to deliver homes up to 2028, and we have a 5-year supply of housing land at the moment, and we have enough planned development in that local plan to enable us to retain control, provided the developers build those sites. So we do have some latitude in terms of programme to prepare the local plan. So whilst Cabinet have approved a timetable to accelerate it and get it out the door as quickly as possible, there is some latitude in that timescale before things start to feel a little uncomfortable.
Okay.
Does that help? Sorry, it's a bit of a mumbling around Robin in reply, but there is some latitude in the...
Yes, I was just concerned, so I'm not sure I would have classified it as amber in that case, possibly.
Well, we're working to the approved milestone dates in the local development scheme because of that, and because we're adrift in terms of publishing that draft plan by October, that's why we're reporting it as amber.
Okay.
So it's a sort of black and white.
Do we have any idea of when it's likely to be out?
Well,
I appreciate that if you're losing your guy with his...
The key point is that we review the local development scheme annually. That's a standing item for Cabinet. So a new project programme will go to Cabinet in March next year, setting out a revised programme which takes account of what is in effect like a change request in project management parlance, but takes account of that slippage. So we'll be recasting that programme. So, from there on in, any new progress will be reported against the revised local development scheme.
So as long as it's completed in time for you to be able to achieve that in March, then we're okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Hunt.
Thank you very much. You've answered more or less all of the question I was going to ask. I'm just going to check, though. It says shortage of staff resources. Was it simply the one chap with a broken leg, or is there a number of people that we are short of due to vacancies or what have you?
Well, it's been due to the one officer who's been on long-term absence due to a broken leg, but also because some of our existing resources within the local plans team have been dedicating considerable amount of their time to supporting the development management function, particularly on trying to unlock the sustainable urban extensions and also surfacing public inquiries on unplanned developments that have come forward. We have a particular large number of those over the last 6 months that we've been supporting. So it's been like a double challenge really for that team.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Bennett.
It's hard to the safety of the chief seats, Chair.
No.
Thank you. And the second AMBER activity within this theme is SLE4 SC3, which is with regards to the delivery of Loughborough Market and the diversity of traders. This particular activity is AMBER due to a shortage of the anticipated target. The achieved was 4202 against a target of 4500, but that really was just because the cancellation of a market due to high winds, and it was out of the services control, so hence why it's AMBER.
Okay.
Thank you, Dick. So I'm going to skip forward quite a few pages to page 24 now, which is the second theme, Every Resident Matters. So within this theme, there were 27 activities to deliver. 21 are assessed as green and one activity is red, with two as amber. The red activity relates to the web service and the satisfaction levels with regards to the web service. Satisfaction levels were 43%, which has decreased from the previous quarter. This was anticipated due to the launch of a new website, and a number of things have been put in place since then. However, I know you've got a separate paper on this day, don't you, Chair? So would you mind if I parked that on there and move forward?
Yes, if you would, we'll park that and it will be dealt with in detail later on in the agenda.
So just to highlight that was revenue in our performance structure. Two activities were assessed as amber. The first one of these was with regards to the food hygiene rating scheme, that's ERM1 RS1. The target, this was graded as amber due to 57% of high risk food safety inspections being undertaken, which is against an annual target of 95%, which was behind the predicted target. And this was due to the service prioritising other areas of work that was necessary within the service. There isn't a profile target for this particular objective in terms of a quarterly target. It was very much based on the head of service's judgment call with regards to where they felt they were at in terms of achieving the annual target. So whilst 57% was only achieved, the head of service is confident that the 95% will be achieved by the end of quarter four, hence why it's rated as amber within this particular report and not red.
If you want.
Thank you. I found the numbers a little bit confusing. If you're looking for 95% over four quarters, 57% is well over 50%, and therefore you would seem to be on target for the 95%. So I couldn't understand why it was graded as amber. If it's a judgment call, I can understand that. Maybe in future we could have a quarterly figure and judge it against that, because it would, I think, make more sense to us. It's a little confusing as it is at the moment. The second thing I noticed, this is obviously quite an important one. If you're talking about food hygiene rating, this is something that significantly affects people very directly. Of the 1,485 that you inspected, I think 41 of them failed to achieve a level 3. The implications that of the report are that a level 3 with satisfaction of one form or another, and below level 3 is unsatisfactory.
Yes.
What actually happens when people don't meet the level 3 criteria?
I can't answer that in full because I'm not from that particular service. So we achieved 97% against a target of 92%, which is a level 3 rating, so it's significantly above target. To my knowledge, what happens is the service then work with the business to improve their hygiene rating score. However, I can get a more succinct answer and a full answer from the head of service.
If you would, please. The reason I'm asking it, I appreciate that you're above the 92%, which is the target, but it still remains that when you're talking about something like food safety, then each one is critical.
To my knowledge, the businesses are worked with in order to improve their rating so that they do succeed. I will ensure we provide a full
answer for you. If you would, I'd appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Okay, and then moving on to the second number activity. This is with regards to satisfaction surveys with members of the public to ensure improvement with regards to face-to-face contact. This was Amber, and I've never known this one to be Amber before, so it is a bit of an anomaly with regards to the usual trend. 85% of customers surveyed, which was 517 of 607, rated their service as good, which is 2% lower than the quarterly target and a 4% decrease on the achieved value of the previous quarter. However, there just doesn't seem to be any particular reason or a trend as to why this has happened. But the service have informed me that they're fully aware of the dip and that they intend to monitor any long-term trends in the future.
Thank you. Councillor Rettler.
Would they look to introduce like further training or refresher training on customer service if there's an issue there by the look of it? I know we're saying it's only a possible dip, but a refresher would be a good start, I think, if it looks like there's something slipping.
Yeah, I think what we would look at that if that was necessary. What we look at is obviously there's a variety of questions that ask. So if the satisfaction was based on that, we would. What we actually think it might be down to is saturation. We get a lot of regular customers that are coming in and they're getting to the point where they don't want to keep doing the same thing. So actually as a service, what we're looking at is around how we monitor satisfaction and seeing whether there's a way that we can refresh that and almost relaunch that to get customers more interested in it again. But certainly if we feel there's a need for training, then we would by no means do that.
Thank you.
And just to highlight to you on page 25, there are three activities graded as completed this quarter.
Yes.
So the first one of these is with regards to safeguarding training. 8 face-to-face courses were delivered to a range of staff and they have completed both e-learning and face-to-face training. The second completed is with regards to the Charnwood Lottery Scheme. This was officially launched on the 4th of September in quarter two. At this point, there were 36 good causes registered with 9 currently going through the application process, and sales were just over 700. And the third one was with regards to the access works at Dishley Pool, which were completed as appropriate. So those were the three completed ones within quarter two.
Thank you.
Moving swiftly forward to page 39. This is the third theme, delivering excellent services. Within this theme, there are 10 activities, 5 assessed as green and 4 activities were graded as amber. The first amber activity relates to a corporate booking system with regards to the cloud-based booking system, which was slightly behind anticipated timescales of the July 2018 implementation dates. The live system is currently being developed to deliver the booking service function in 2 particular areas with an anticipated go live date of quarter three and the objective to deliver 100 transactions by the end of the financial year remains on track, hence why this particular objective has been graded as amber.
Okay. Thank you.
The second number activity is with regards to the way customers can interact with us to improve the online experience for customers. This is behind timescales again with regards to the number of annual online transactions. A range of activity has taken place in quarter two towards this action and therefore the service are confident that the annual target will be met.
Okay, everybody.
Thank you. Take. The next page on page 40, this is the third amber activity. This is with regards to the digital democracy project. I see you've all, a lot of you have got your equipment in front of me. This is slightly behind anticipated timescales. So whilst the new system was live in 2018 of September 2018, and a wealth of activity has taken place to date, there's still a number of other elements that can be achieved as part of this digital democracy project. And that will take place throughout quarter three. Hence why, again, it is graded as amber and isn't quite complete at this stage. And the last amber activity is with regards to the customer service programme. The project remains as amber as no customer service programme board meetings have been held or arranged and therefore the programme has fallen stagnant.
Councillor Hunt.
I'll leave perhaps that point for you, but just generally going over those four, it just... it feels like, at least that way, that several customer facing things are amber or red at the moment, as against other things. So, and it, the customers are what we're all about. So is there anything, activity in general, about making sure we're focusing on customers and prioritising them?
I think we are prioritising them. A lot of what we're trying to do with customers is technology based, and sometimes that becomes complicated where we're using multiple systems or we need to use integration. So I think it's not, look, customer focus is certainly what we're doing. The introduction of the new customer experience team, I think, solidifies that view. But what we're making sure is that we get things right. We don't want to push things online that aren't necessarily right. And we want to make sure that we're focusing on the right areas. So I think there's been a period of reflection in terms of what we're doing and how we do it. There's been the implementation of the restructure and the new teams around that development. And that in some ways has pushed some of these things back. We're now up to speed. We are redesigning our programmes and looking at what we want need to do so that we can push forward.
Okay, thank you. Are you going to cover the programme?
I was there, yeah. I was going to ask about the second one, the delivery against project milestones as reported to the programme. They're amber because there's no more meetings and not arranged. Should there be more meetings arranged, and are there planned to be eventually?
I'll try and answer this one. In terms of the reason there hasn't been any more arranged is because of the consideration of the what was the review that we had, the external
conference? Oh, the peer assessment.
Sorry, yeah, the peer challenge, which talked about different ways in which we needed to move forward and talked about transformational activity. And as a result of that, there is looking at whether there needs to be a transformational strategy that will replace the current customer programme board. So we've got meetings at the moment that are looking at how we address the recommendations that are coming from the peer challenge to overhaul the programme as it was before. So yes, there is progress being made, but there's consideration of how we need to meet those requirements from the peer challenge.
How do we go forward with that so that we can keep an eye on it and what's happening?
Chair, if I may, just before. So when I took this report to SMT, they discussed this particular objective, and the chief executive made an action for himself to introduce a further programme board meeting to take place, whether that be just to close the programme as is in the anticipation of a new programme to open, or whether that for further activity to take place. So I think as of quarter three, I will have more to report.
You'll
back
have
to
more
you on
to
that
report.
Particular objective.
Thank you very much. Any more on that section?
No.
Thank you.
Okay, and then just off actually coming off of what you said, Councillor Hunt, the last activity on this one is completed, and that's with regards to undertaking the customer service excellence assessment. And so that was achieved in September 2018, and we were awarded a total of 5 compliance plus ratings, and hence the efforts we are going to in order to improve our customer services across the council.
Councillor
Campbell, Garryman Ward, page 30. I'd just like to, for the record, say that we didn't get charitable status. Yeah, we've got reapply, so we should make a note of that.
What are we looking
for? For the Thorpe Acre Hall. We've been applying for charity status now for what seems like years, and we found out last week that they turned us down, so
okay.
We've got to reapply.
Right. So that needs amending.
Yeah.
Okay. I leave that with you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, I'll move forward to page 46. I'll go to page 47, which is the business plan indicators. Again, I'll just report by exception. The first one is BP8, which is amber, the number of stall units less across the market, the same as the objective. This was due to the high wind, and I've reported that already. Moving to page 48, the second amber activity is BP12. We've reported that for the face-to-face services, and Kerry has given the further explanation with regards to that. Then we come to our red activity, which is with regards to BP14, and that's the web-related service received. And again that will be picked up via the additional report today. So all of those under the business plan indicators have either been covered or will be picked up later on in the meeting. Moving to page 50 is our key corporate indicators. And the first red indicator is KI4, which is the percentage of household waste sent for reuse, recycling and composting. So if I may, Chair, invite Matt to the table to discuss along with Councillor Harper-Davis.
Thank you. Welcome.
We've been here before with the same. Thank you.
This indicator is one that we do struggle to hit. We are normally slightly below the 50%, and that has been the trend for some time now. The reason the target is set at 50% is that there's a national target to recycle 50% of our waste by April 2020. So we're reluctant to reduce the target and have considered that, but we didn't feel that was appropriate. The normal performance for this particular indicator is about 48%, and we are sort of below where we would normally be for this indicator, and there are a number of reasons that we report to this committee on a regular basis why we don't hit the target, but I think this year we've got some exceptional circumstances as well with a few things. Mm-hmm. So the regular things that we report are that there are national and local trends for the this target is measured by weight. It's the weight of your recycling and composting compared to the weight of your residual waste bin. So weight's the important factor here, and there are trends in the packaging market that mean that the weight is reducing in the recycling bin. So packaging is changing, glass is thinner, we're buying concentrated liquids rather than large bottles of unconcentrated liquids. Glass is being replaced with lighter materials, so coffee jars are being replaced with foil packs, and we're using less paper, so we transact with people via email and there's less newspaper circulation. So there is a kind of a peak or a downward trend generally for recycling, but I think the main thing this year and this period was from April to the end of September is the very dry conditions that we had, and the amount of garden waste that we collected was significantly down. Obviously people didn't need to cut the lawns because the grass wasn't growing as much as it would normally do, and that has a direct impact on the weight of the material that we collect, and has had a significant impact on this performance indicator for this first 6 months of the year. So whilst there are some regular reasons that we report, I think there are some exceptional ones that have happened over the summer that mean that we are below both the target and where we would normally be on this one.
Councillor Hunt.
Thank you. Thank you, Matt. The 50%,
yes.
Is it 50% of a number we've already decided at the beginning of the year then, or is it 50% of everything we receive as we receive it? Because if it was as we receive it, then we'd just be having 50% of a slightly smaller pot, if you see what I mean.
Yes, it's the total waste that we collect.
Yes.
By weight.
Yeah.
It's the percentage of residual waste, so the weight of what we put in the black bin collectively for the year against the weight of the recycling and composting that we collect in the year. So it's not fixed, it's based on, it's a removable target, if you like.
So, forgive me, let's put it in my terms because I understand it that way. Say we collected 10 tonnes today.
Yes.
50% of 10 tonnes is 5 tonnes.
Yes.
So if we have 5 tonnes going to recycling,
yes,
we've hit the 50% target.
Yes.
So if in July, for example, my husband wasn't mowing the lawn as much as he normally does because it wasn't growing, we were getting a less of a weight coming in, therefore 50% of a lesser thing is still 50%.
But the amount of residual waste that you collect is largely static.
Ah.
But the amount of combined recycling and composting would have reduced.
I understand that.
The proportion changes slightly.
Yeah, gotcha. Thank you.
Councillor Rattray.
Is it just waste that's collected, or does it include waste that's taken to the recycling centres?
This is waste that we collect at the curbside.
So do we think that there's an impact of, obviously the cost of the green bit, like green waste, has gone up, hasn't it?
It has.
Do we think there's potentially people are actually taking their own green waste to the centres and it's not being collected? And that could be having an impact on it.
That's an interesting point. Our green waste subscription numbers have risen throughout the year, month on month. We had one month in September where the numbers actually dropped slightly, but there has been a consistent rise in subscribers pretty much for the year to date. So the numbers haven't dropped. If they'd have risen, they might have risen more had the charge been less. We just don't
brown waste.
I think I've probably got to say, and I've probably said this at this committee before, I think we are reluctant to change the target, but I think we have to recognise that we are unlikely to hit this target over time unless we make some fundamental changes to the way that we collect waste, and that is costly, very costly for this council, and it may have knock-on impacts on customer satisfaction. So a lot of the top performing authorities collect food waste, but in order to facilitate that, they collect their residual waste every 3 weeks. So is that really what our customers would want? There's a question there. Another point that I would probably make is a lot of the top performing authorities do have a free garden waste collection. This authority gets about 1.4 million annually from garden waste subscriptions, and if we offered that service, that income would be foregone and it would create a huge hole in the budget. So there are sort of cost considerations as well as performance ones, and we'll have to add that into the mix and consider things in the balance, really.
I think that's, it's important to say as well that you do look at it on a regular basis to see whether it's, you know, it's going to be profitable for Charnwood, and from the collection of food waste, it's just not, is it? Too expensive, but it isn't something that we actually rule out because it's looked at regularly.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
So if I can move to the next red indicator, which is KI7, time taken to process housing benefit or council tax benefit, new claims and change events. The target was 17 days, sorry, and the achieved was 25.04 days. So if I could invite Harry Barnshaw to the table and Mark Bennett for further explanation.
Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
So, Kerry Barnshaw, Head of Customer Experience. Have brought Mark Bennett along, who is the Charnwood Site Manager for Capita. As you are aware, Capita will deliver our services for us. So we have been struggling to achieve this target recently. There's been a number of different reasons for that. Mark, you have been able to talk through the variety of different reasons as to how we've got to this. Would you like me to start and then you can make some?
No, I'm fine.
Okay, so I'll hand over to Mark and he can give probably a bit more detail into how we've got to where we are and the steps we're taking to improve that.
Thank you. Yes, these are challenging times, not least because of the introduction of Universal Credit for service into Charnwood in June. So just to give you a couple of pointers on that that got us to the stage that we were at in the first place. One of the things that is a significant part of Universal Credit is erroneous notifications that come through. But we don't know that those notifications are erroneous until we spent the time going in and looking at the article of work. So just to give you a couple of figures, in June we had 56 notifications because we went live midway through the month. For October we had 888 items of work coming in on Universal Credit. And from the 1st of June to the 31st of October, that's 2,167 additional pieces. And I had a quick look yesterday, there were 82, so it looks like November's getting bigger and bigger. So the volume of work that's coming in has been significantly increased. We have recruited two new Charnwood-based permanent full-time members of staff, and they're currently on a 13-week training programme. And we've got two existing members who are adding to their skill set, so they're involved in that training programme as well. The downside to that, of course, is that if you're taking existing members of staff out to train them on the full range of activities, what they've been able to contribute is adversely affected. But they come out of training the day before we break up for Christmas. So when they their new year will be hopefully a happy new year, but certainly the way that they're being trained to become operationally effective as quickly as possible means that we'll start to see, even during their training, them making a difference to the amount of work that we'd got coming in. Our sickness is very low. For October it was 2.8% across both the revenues, council tax and business rates, and benefits services as well. So the volume of work that we've had coming in has increased. We've also had a member of staff who's been on maternity leave since October last year and isn't, as a matter of procedure, replaced. So the existing number of staff that we've got, who are largely part-time and work varied hours, has effectively reduced whilst the workload coming in has increased. To give you an indicator as to what we've been doing, over the past 2 months, well, since the beginning of September, we've had concerted support from other colleagues, so some off-site support from colleagues of ours in Carlisle for a 2-week concentrated period to deal with the backlog in work, and to ring fence childhood base, so ring fence in-house a day's work in a day. So people were digging away at the older stuff. The downside is that when you start to deal with the older stuff and you process something, it actually elongates the days taken because you're looking at an older piece of work. But we were, for example, at our worst in August, we were looking at 36.54 days for the combined changes and new claims against the 17 day KPI. Although the KPI is an annual report at the moment, and that was within that 36.54 days, we were looking at 34 days for dealing with changes in circumstances and 53 days for dealing with new claims. As of Sunday just gone, so the end of last week, the figure that we were looking at, so where we are at the moment, is a combined figure of 15.58 days against the 17-day target, with changes in circumstances being completed in 10.9 days and new claims 38.53 days. So that's reduced from 53.28 days in August.
Sorry, that's fine. I was just going to have four questions. What I just wanted to add is, as Mark has mentioned, this is an annual target, and I think it's important probably to point out now, because of where we've got to in terms of processing time, now that it is actually back within target, it is still unlikely that we'll hit the annual target. So we will be here again to see you with the same information, but I just think it's worth pointing that out to you, that it's very, very unlikely that we will now hit the overall annual target on this, despite the efforts that have been made. And there has been significant additional resources brought in by Capita to address this, and I do think that needs to be recognised.
Thank you very much. Madam Chairman, I have to say I am very disappointed with this report. Delays in receiving housing benefit, council tax benefit, causes a great deal of stress and worry to our residents. And really, I don't think these figures are good enough. I don't blame Charnwood, actually. I think our officers have worked very hard. I've heard what Mr. Bennett says. I'm very glad to hear that Capita are now recruiting and training extra staff. I hope that they will very quickly make a difference, because I have casework relating to delays in housing and council tax benefit, and they are very distressing. And I can only repeat, I am very disappointed with these figures. If it is possible, I would like us to be able to look at this again, just this item, on our next, I'd like it to be on our work programme for our next meeting if possible, so that we can closely monitor this, because this is, I don't believe that this is an issue we can take our eyes off. Thank you very much, my Lord Chair.
Councillor Hunt and then Councillor Harrison.
Thank you very much indeed. I hear what you're saying about the 25.04 days in quarter two, but we weren't hitting it in quarter one either, and we didn't go live until the 11th of July on Universal Credit. So we weren't hitting the numbers then. Is there a service level agreement between Capita and Sherwood, and is that 17 days?
Yes.
So what penalty are we putting on Capita for not hitting the 17 days? Not you specifically, do forgive me. I'm talking about the we have a contract with an organisation to deliver a certain number, and I'm just wondering what we are doing about that.
The 17 days is an annual target, so until Capita don't hit the annual target in terms of actually putting a financial penalty in place, I can't, because at the moment they're not, and officially not hitting the target.
Right.
So it's annual. So I have to look at the point where that is not met at the end of the third quarter. That's the point in which I can take formal action.
Right.
What Capita are doing, because obviously I'm doing contract model, is responding. So all of the action that they're taking officially, they don't have to do that. We've had 7 additional FTE for a period of time to address this issue. That's come out of Capita's own costs to meet our requirements. That. Officially, I don't have to do that.
Right.
I can't do that until later on.
So if I may just interject just absolutely. For a minute. Following on from what Councillor Forrest said, she was talking about the residents themselves. I'm wondering about the impact on the inside the business of the council, because, yeah, for example, we're sending out arrears letters to people who don't or aren't actually in arrears, because the housing benefit's not been processed, or is not, there's lots of reasons why actually, but the batch processing and so on, if we don't separate those batches out to the various different rent accounts, then it looks like somebody's in arrears, and we have the additional cost then and resources in another department of sending out those letters, as well as the aspect that Councillor Forrest mentioned.
Yeah, in relation to particularly our own rent accounts, where we've got where we've got claims outstanding, for example, there's a process that Mark has set up with the rent collection team in order to facilitate a claim to be pushed through to make sure that we're not in that situation. So where we have information around hardship or risk of tenancy, etc., those cases are escalated and processed so that we reduce any of those impacts, and that's something that's been ongoing for a number of months now in order to reduce any of those impacts as much as we can.
I think that's superb, don't get me wrong. I think that helps Councillor Forrest, but we've still got resources in the housing department, mm-hmm. I'm guessing, who send out the rent arrears letters, yep. Who are still doing it.
Yes.
And they wouldn't do it if this was hitting potentially.
Absolutely.
I can't say for certain, but I'm thinking at least some of those wouldn't send out those rent arrears letters if those figures were in there, in their accounts, and they could see that, yes, they are, you know, that money's coming.
There is no question there's a knock-on effect with the authority. No. I've had regular meetings with Pete Oliver to discuss those and what we can do to limit that. I'm trying to do that all through the contract management process. If I can just go back to your first point, which was this was happening before Universal Credit. That's quite right. And that came as a result of issues around the quality performance indicator that wasn't being met. In order for Capita to start addressing not meeting quality, they slowed down processing. Slowing down process has resulted in this backlog. So in order to meet one KPI, no KPI has suffered. That KPI is going through a formal process in terms of the financial implications around penalties in order to do that. So we are now in this position where, because I'm asking them to deal with one, we've now got an area of concern on another. And that's something that both myself, Simon Jackson and Jeff have met with Capita to discuss how we're going to get to a point where all of our KPIs are being met And there's a variety of different action plans that we're working through to do that. So it's to acknowledge that it's not just universal credit that has caused this. Yeah. There has been an issue with the quality of work in terms of accuracy that has been looked at and has meant that they've had to try and address that. It is a very difficult situation in order because there's a very small tolerance in terms of our accuracy. You know, we're not talking about 1 or 2%, you're talking about 0.1%. And that can be a single claim that's not 100% accurate that then affects the whole accuracy requirements around that. So it's complicated. You know, I am pleased to say that the working relationship that we have is positive, that we are escalating everywhere, and I'm doing every part of contract management I can to ensure that Capita are meeting that requirement. And there is commitment at this stage from Capita in order to meet that requirement as well, because the focus has to be, as you've said, on the implication to the customer, and that's where the focus must remain.
Thank you.
Councillor Huddleston.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, where I'm sitting, there seems to have been a real failure in terms of planning for this. As far as I'm aware, Charnwood wasn't the first to go through this process, so there must have been less than learned previously. So unless Charnwood is, for some reason, bizarrely different to everybody else, this increase in work that you're talking about must have been known about. And if it takes 13 weeks to train somebody, why weren't they being trained in April to have 30 months of training to be ready for June? That's one thing. The other thing that concerns me greatly is we've asked several times and been reassured that the planning for the introduction of universal credit, both in terms of these, I believe, are new claimants, aren't they? But at some point in the future, everybody's going to be switched to universal credit, which will be a massive increase in numbers from this. We've been assured that we've got the resources, we've got the planning, it's all going to be fine. This first stage appears to me to have gone horribly wrong. And therefore, the assurances that we've been given about what's going to happen in a year's time, they're not worth so much now, because if you can't plan for this little bit, what on earth is going to happen when the real numbers come through? And everybody has changed over this, because if you get this, is, I believe universal credit, we're talking about 200-300 people so far.
I think that's
when we get to the full changeover, you're talking about thousands of people. How are you going to deal with that, and are you going to learn the lessons from this mistake, because that's what it is, to get that right? Because I really do think we need to monitor this quite quickly, because that could be absolutely horrendous. I don't know if it's 6 months or a year's time. But if that is the case, yeah, then we need to do something now, not wait till we get there and then spend 3 months training people. It needs to start now, because I think this planning has been appalling. Right?
Sorry, I was going to say the three staff that Mark's talk about were not were replacing existing staff. So I believe that's correct. Yes. They were not three additional staff brought in to do this. There's been no additional resources within the contract to do that. In terms of predicting the volumes of notifications coming through from Universal Credit, that's been virtually impossible to do that. We've spoken to other authorities, and it's varied greatly from authority to authority. And the number, as Mark has talked about erroneous notifications, where they come through, we have to check, we don't have to do anything about it, is that, again, is also virtually impossible to predict, because some of those shouldn't even be coming through to us. That's an issue with DWP in terms of notifications for other authorities coming through to us. So in terms of understanding that we were going to have 500, 600, 700% increase in notifications, it's going to be very difficult to do that.
So that's and not happened anywhere else then?
There has been increases everywhere else, but it's been varied depending on which organisation. So I've had monthly meetings with all the Leicestershire partnerships, and we weren't the first to go over. And what some of them have done is managed it within their existing resources. Some of them have had to go back and ask for additional resource in order to do that. They're all in-house services. We've obviously got a contract that's paid in place. And what we need to do is understand, and what we're taking this opportunity is understand how far that impact's going to go. As a result of that, we've also looked at there's potentially going to need to be changes to the council tax support scheme. Because of the way those notifications come in, mean further actions are going to have to be taken, because every time a person's income changes, a notification comes through to us, and that can affect their council tax support. So whilst I fully appreciate it would have been an ideal situation if we could have predicted these volumes, we didn't have the information to predict this was going to be this significant impact. And it's the combination of that increase with summer holiday period, three staff down, that has contributed. If we were fully up to speed, it's likely the impact wouldn't have been significant. If we were fully up to speed and weren't in peak leave period and had a maternity cover, it's likely the impact wouldn't have been so significant and we would have been able to smooth that. It's sort of the accumulation of a variety of different factors that have hit us in the worst possible way.
So if you don't know what the numbers are going to be, are you confident that you're going to be able to manage when there's the full switchover?
I think the full switcher is a very different circumstance, and at the moment we couldn't tell you that. We can't even tell you when the full switchover is going to happen. I went to a DWP partnership meeting last week. The very first time they're going to be starting some testing is in July 2019, and they're talking about 25 cases nationally they're going to be. By the end of the year, they want to see that up to 10,000. But at this stage, there is absolutely no plan for timescales of rollout, other than in the autumn budget, it was announced it wouldn't be carrying on until 2024. Mm. Our current contract with Capita runs out in 2020. So it's going to be very difficult at this stage to predict what the impact of that's going to be. I can assure you as an organisation that we are working with all of our partners, we are working with DWP to understand that impact, but it's very difficult to understand with such a changing landscape with Universal Credit exactly what that's going to look like. There is no plans from the DWP yet to share with us how that managed migration is going to work. The only information I've been given is for everybody that will have to completely reapply again, and they will be given a 4 to 6 month leading period for that application. But other than that, and that was the latest information I received last week, we do not know how managed migration is going to work, and so it's very difficult at this stage for us to give you some reassurance that I can tell you exactly that we're going to understand the impact on the organisation. As we know more, we will do our absolute best to forecast the implications of that. But today, I can only give you the assurance that that's how we will work. I can't tell you what that's going to look like, because we don't know.
Thank you very much. I mean, I think we all appreciate that it's not you personally, council personally. I think it has been put forward, and I think it will be a proposal that we revisit this at our next meeting, which will be in February, which gives us another 2 or 3 months. Mm-hmm. Hopefully by then the team will have more clarity from other places other than this council of what is likely to come ahead. It is a national situation that's fluctuating. Mm-hmm. And I think I appreciate Mr. Bennett coming along to explain things to us, and I'm sure the panel do as well. And I think if we can move this now, if that's all right, I think the officers have got the impression of what we feel and how it is, and if we can have this back at our February meeting, I think all of us will have a bit more.
That's the next meeting.
The next meeting's January. Which I think is, in all honesty, is a bit soon.
Madam Chair, I was going to say, can we get it on the January meeting? Is there room on the January agenda for it, or would we be better? I mean, I have no problem with it going onto the February meeting, because, let's give Capita time to turn this around, and perhaps by then we'll be back on target.
I think where we if now, bearing in mind what's coming up, I think it would be more valuable to all of us if we had it at the February meeting, which is the 19th of February, rather than, because all the papers and all the information would have to be ready by almost the beginning of January, which is not much further than we are now. So I would like to propose that it comes to the 19th of February meeting.
Are you suggesting that it's an additional report to the performance monitoring report that you would
see? I think we'd like to see a separate report.
So
if that's not an additional agenda item.
What you perhaps need to consider is that you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 reports already in the February meeting. It's perhaps, if you wanted to move that, it goes to a future meeting at this point, and then when we get to the work programme item, you might want to look at your actual numbers of reports.
Yeah, well, let's put it in for the
You have two items scheduled for your January meeting and six items scheduled for your February meeting. I suppose, subject to Carey's view, I suppose what you could potentially have for the January meeting would be the November and December figures.
Yeah, what date is it in January?
22nd of January.
Yeah, we'll have quarter. We get the quarter three figures through very early, so
if we had
to do that in January.
So if we had that for January,
yeah,
as much as they can give us.
Yep, that's fine.
Yes, we've only got two items in January.
Very happy with that. Very happy indeed. Just on that, the processing of housing benefit, council tax benefit.
Sorry.
Do we have a individual just case report? 17. About K17.
Okay. Yes.
So just to clarify then, that the panel has agreed that we will have a separate report on KI7 from
in January.
Customer service team in January's meeting.
Mm-hmm. As long as we have it back before us in good time.
Mm. Well, if it comes in January.
Absolutely, that's fine.
Okay.
Can I just say, sorry, if there's any specific cases, I'm sure all Carey, as she already does already, if you're any particularly worried about a specific case, please highlight it, Carey, because she's very good, the team are brilliant, and they will do all they can for that particular resident. I know that because there's been several cases I've been copied into, so please share your worries with Carey and the specific residents, because we can't have them, you know, sort of like falling into significant hardship. It's just not right.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Ms. Bennett.
Thank you, Dick. And I just want to highlight to you our last bed indicator, which is featured on page 51 of the report, which is KI2, number of affordable homes delivered. The target was 88 homes and the achieved was 79 homes. So if I can invite the other Mr. Bennett to the table to discuss that one, please. And Councillor Ward as well.
Thank you very much. Mike.
Okay, good evening, Chair. Richard Bennett, Head of Planning and Regeneration. I've brought my name badge for the avoidance of confusion with our previous officer. So the indicator here, the quarterly target is 44 homes. You can see that the development industry has built 79 homes from a target of 88 by quarter two. So we're just short of what that target is. However, as the narrative indicates, there are 113 affordable homes that were under construction at the end of September. So we're very confident that the annual target will be exceeded by year end. So this is in effect a profiling issue.
Thank you,
Mr. Jess.
Thank you, Councillor Bevington.
Yes, it's an area I have actually some concern about because I'm also on the plans committee, by the way, as well as this one. And I'm noticing that several of the developments that have come through recently already have outline planning permission. When it gets to detailed planning permission, are actually seeking either to reduce or completely remove the number of affordable homes. And there's already been several cases that have been sent through to the valuer to be examined, and the valuer has actually accepted their argument and reduced the number of affordable homes. We've also got one more in my particular ward whereby the developer has actually stopped building partway through, and that's having an effect not just on the affordable homes but also the S106 monies that are not coming available. There's also some other work they promised to do that they haven't done as well. But I'm getting concerned about some of the developers are actually not performing in the way that we would expect them to do, and therefore, although you're quite right in terms that the number of homes that are being forecast over the next period of time that have already started construction, that we may not achieve as many as we expect to achieve for various reasons. I just wondered if you had any comments about that.
Through you, Chair, it is the case that we have no control over the development industry as a council. Whilst the planning authority has a role around granting planning permission, we have no control over what developers do with that planning permission once it's granted. That's not true, actually. The government very recently introduced measures whereby we can reduce the amount of time that developers have to apply for reserved matters. So the standard is 3 years, so we can set it to be a year if we want to now, whereas previously it used to be with agreement with the developer. So we do have a little bit of control, but what we can't do, once the reserved matters is being granted, we can't make the developer build. And that's the issue here. Developers are at the the will of the market, and will do what they want to do.
Just
very quickly, before Councillor Vardy comes in, what this does tell you is that there are 113 homes which are under construction, and there's nothing to suggest at the moment that they won't be completed. We would expect from a trend that those homes would be completed before year end, and therefore the target in the corporate plan should be exceeded. We've no reason to doubt that those properties won't be completed in that time, although, as I say, we have no control.
Richard covered the part, the very point that I was going to make about, you know, we can't speculate too much here. You know, we don't know what's going to happen. Some of the things that the Council of Bebington has said might well happen, but there's no indicator at the moment that is happening, and if it does, then we'll be back here and we'll be able to report that to you with some accuracy.
Okay.
Well, if I can just respond to that, because some of these things actually have happened already. As I say, that people have gone back and cancelled the number of affordable homes, either completely or to a certain extent. It's already happening. I'm not picking on.
I think what we're looking at here is
there is a degree of reservation that we need to have with the figures. And you're right, we have to keep an eye on it, and it obviously it will be kept in because it's in the performance review figures. And I just wanted to make that point that we do need to keep an eye on it, otherwise we're in danger of,
we'll be assured that
of
we are
missing
doing.
It.
Okay, thank you.
As always, there's the complaints information and the sickness information. I know you've got a separate report for sickness anyway. I did want to highlight to you that although you've got your sickness report coming up, it was amber this quarter, so it has improved from last quarter as well, because I know it was an issue for you here last quarter. So it was just really whether there's any questions from...
We have covered most of the items as we've gone along, which I think it makes it easier for people. So... thank you very much. Thank you very much. We always look forward to your report, you know that.
As do I.
Right, that's item six. Agenda item seven, which starts on page 61. And I'll ask Councillor Mercer as the lead member.